From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Monday, February 12, 2018. And on this day, facing a major lawsuit for deceptive marketing, the maker of OxyContin says it will no longer market the drug to doctors. And we'll continue our series on Maine exports with a visit to Wyman's of Maine and a look at its exports to Asia. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, four generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
The maker of OxyContin, one of the most common prescription painkillers involved in opioid overdose deaths, will no longer market the drug to doctors. The announcement from Purdue Pharma on Saturday comes as the company faces a lawsuit for deceptive marketing brought by cities and counties across the U.S., including several in Maine. As Patty White reports, some Maine physicians say the change is a positive step, but one that is long overdue.
The days of marketing opioids to U.S. doctors are over, according to a statement issued by Purdue Pharma. The drug manufacturer has also cut its sales force by more than half. Just how important are these steps in the backdrop of an opioid epidemic that took the lives of more than 300 Maine people in 2016?
They're 20 years late to the game.
That's Dr. Noah Nesson, a family physician and vice president of medical affairs at Penobscot Community Healthcare. He says even after Purdue Pharma paid $600 million in fines about a decade ago for misleading doctors and regulators about the risks opioids posed for addiction and abuse, it continued marketing them.
So I think it's similar to the tobacco industry, learning that they could continue to sell tobacco without spending a lot of money on advertising. My guess is that this decision is in their self-interest.
A nationwide lawsuit against Purdue Pharma for deceptive marketing continues to grow. Seven cities in Maine have joined, including Portland, Lewiston, and Bangor, along with five counties, to recoup some of the costs of addressing the addiction crisis. A spokesman for Purdue Pharma said in an email that the decision to stop marketing to prescribers is voluntary and independent of any litigation. Dr. Nesson says at the very least, the company's action reinforces the message that doctors should be cautious when prescribing opioids. The president of the Maine Medical Association, Dr. Robert Schlager, agrees that it's a good, if small, step to fight the opioid epidemic.
I wouldn't expect it to have a very large role in limiting opioids further, because most of us as prescribers do limit our information exchange with the drug representatives who have been marketing opioids.
Since 2016, doctors in Maine have also adhered to prescribing limits enacted by the legislature. Dr. Schlager says Purdue Pharma should go further and suspend opioid marketing worldwide.
It seems a little bit not honest to just limit it here in the United States.
In an email, a Purdue Pharma spokesman says that the company only operates in the United States and that an associated company, Munda Pharma, has not marketed opioids in Europe since 2013. A Los Angeles Times investigation in 2016 found that the family who owns Purdue Pharma has a network of international companies known as Munda Pharma, which operates on six continents, that employ the same marketing practices used in the U.S. that made OxyContin a blockbuster drug. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
The Trump administration today released a budget proposal that beefs up military and border security spending while slashing funds for domestic programs like SNAP and Medicaid. Advocates in Maine, like James Gagne, who heads the Veterans Housing Services at Preble Street, say they're worried that Trump's budget could threaten many Mainers. Gagne works closely with veterans experiencing homelessness, and he says SNAP is a lifeline for many of them.
Those are veterans that are trying to get back to work, trying to get their health care needs met, and they're faced with sometimes seemingly insurmountable barriers. And so cutting SNAP further just adds another barrier and another layer to folks getting back on their feet.
About one in seven Mainers relies on Supplemental Nutrition Assistance, or the SNAP program, and Trump's proposed budget includes a 30% reduction in benefits. The budget proposal needs to go through both chambers of Congress and has little, if any, chance of being passed as written. In other U.S. budget news, that deal signed into law last week by President Trump only sets the overall caps on spending. Republican Senator Susan Collins and Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree sit on their respective appropriations committees. That means they now must determine the spending levels program by program within those caps. Pingree says it'll be hard to rewrite the current funding bills and next year's, especially given that they have to do it in about 6 weeks. But she says it needs to be done to avoid another shutdown.
I think there'll be plenty of sticking points around the healthcare arena because you've got everything around the Affordable Care Act where, you know, some things have been stripped out.
Both Pingree and Collins say they expect a lot of tough negotiating in the weeks ahead. If you're from out of state, it may soon cost you more to ride Maine State ferries to and from Midcoast Islands. The state ferry service has proposed a set of fare increases in order to offset a projected budget shortfall. Right now, there are two different prices: full price for a ticket purchased at a mainland terminal with a discount for island purchases. Maine State Ferry Manager Mark Higgins.
It was originally instituted to minimize the cost for year-round residents. However, we found that even during peak summer months, approximately about 80% of the Maine State Ferry Service tickets are being generated at island terminals.
So under the current proposal, there would be a single rate tier. Maine State residents showing a driver's license or other form of state ID would get a discount. Higgins says under state law, half of ferry service revenue has to come from fares and fees, with the other half from the state highway fund. And officials say year-round Maine residents should get a discount because they pay a disproportionately high amount into the highway fund through their gas taxes. Higgins says the state's looking for new fares to go into effect in the third week of April. Finally today, if you're planning to make the trip to South Korea for the Olympics, you're likely to experience some exotic new foods. But you might also find Maine blueberries on the menu. Maine holds a corner on the global market for this very special crop. In this installment of our series, It Can Get There From Here, Jennifer Mitchell visits Wyman's of Maine, where the product is closely tied to the place.
We're inside what manufacturing manager Adam West describes as a teeny tiny freezer.
This is 1.5 million pounds. And our one in DuBois, our main cold storage is 12.1 million, where we store most of our finished packs. Then we've got one in Jonesboro for 10 million pounds.
These facilities, coupled with some in Canada, will store the fruits from 17,000 acres of blueberry fields. All the crates and cartons at this facility in Cherryfield will be gone in a matter of hours on their way to school cafeterias, boxes of Betty Crocker muffin mix, and retail freezers across the U.S. and maybe beyond.
Will some of this wind up overseas?
It will. Are we running for any Korean customers this week?
That's Vice President of Sales Tom Gardner.
We'll end up either in a 30-pound carton going overseas or, like Tom said, on the retail market.
So we're going to run this product into, where's the 30-pounder? 30-pound carton right there, which could be on the shelf in Korea.
So how did a modest Maine company turn into one of the state's major exporters, with its berries bobbing across oceans? Well, first let's go back. Wyman's has been around for 144 years, but back then the business wasn't berries.
The company started as a canning company years ago, and it was a seafood canning company.
Gardner says the original Jasper Wyman in 1874 staked his livelihood on Downeast Maine's other big product, seafood. Wyman canned clams, sardines, and even to the horror of modern Maine foodies, lobster. But over the next several decades, the Wyman family started to tune in to what was still a fairly unexploited resource around them, the Rocky Barrens stretching across eastern Maine and Canada.
And I don't know how much you know about wild blueberries, but this is the only geography where the plant thrives. It's been here for thousands of years, and we pretty much manage it. But you won't find wild blueberries in commercial quantities outside of this geography.
Over the 20th century, the company tightened its focus on the wild blueberries around them, finally exiting the seafood canning industry altogether in the 1980s. What started as a modest and very regional company is now the biggest producer of wild blueberries in the U.S. and the second biggest frozen fruit company after Dole, thanks in no small part to growing interest in antioxidants and so-called superfoods. A serving of wild blueberries, as it turns out, is high in antioxidants, and that's helped the wild blueberry recast its role from fattening pie filler to global health food.
Japan and the Japanese consumer was on to the health benefits of wild blueberries even before many of the consumers here in the United States, so there was demand there for it. And the same thing happened in Korea. We were actually getting phone calls, which is a really good place to be if you're a salesperson, to get a customer calling you.
As with most private companies, the precise figures are purposely cloaked in mystery. But Gardner says Wyman's ships well in excess of 1 million pounds of the berries to South Korea each year, with more pounds destined to Japan. The company is just starting to enter the Chinese market as well. Wyman's marketing strategy focuses on the wild part of its label and ways to further distance the product from the larger, cultivated berries, which are also starting to enter freezer cases around the world. Gardner says a few years ago, Wyman's officially became Wyman's of Maine.
I think whether you're in Japan or California, when you say Maine to people, they think of rugged, pure, natural, and that fits very well with our products. So Maine and trying to leverage that in our selling story is very important.
Of course, it's not all about the magic of marketing. A free trade deal with South Korea in 2012 eased the tariff burdens for companies like Wyman's looking to sell there. Recent suggestions from President Donald Trump of a potential repeal of that deal has the company taking notice, but Gardner says they'll take a wait-and-see approach for now. In addition to component and retail sales into South Korea, Gardner says Wyman's wholesale customers include some of the biggest yogurt and food companies in the world. So the Wyman's wild berries really could be anywhere.
So, I mean, do you ever come in here and look at this and wonder where all it's going to be next week and next month?
All the time. All the time. If you're in sales, you know that these berries, these packages could be 25 to 50 foreign markets. You could see our blueberries in Dubai next week. It's possible.
And of course, the company is always looking for a bigger piece of the pie. The next slice, Singapore, Vietnam, and Malaysia. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Monday, February 12th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.